WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk. It's actually the final... I can't believe it's the final show of February. I can turn you up, Representative, if you want. Put those back on. I'll turn you up. We're doing a little bit of engineering here in the aircraft studio. Can you hear me okay? 1, 2, 3. You're not? No? All right. I'll take care of that during the break. Of course, I'm speaking with our first guest who is here early, warming up in the bullpen. Don't forget, there's a pitch clock. State Representative Steve Exaris. He hails from the Fightin' Fifth.
That's right.
The Fightin' Fifth. He is here. But I don't want to bury the lead here because this is Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi and State Representative Kathy Lenatra, who is my co-host. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
So what do you think of tonight's lineup?
I'm so excited with tonight's lineup. Well, to see my great friend and colleague, Steve Exaris, which I did not expect. So good
yes.
to see you, Steve.
Right back at you. Well, what's fantastic is neither of you knew about that.
Yes, no.
No, I know.
But I love it. We get along so well. It's so funny. And this is her turf. It's important.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yes.
So Steve and I met before he was a rep.
That's right.
We met on the Common, and he was handing out coats.
Yeah.
For veterans. But who was with you? Cox.
Don Cox. And Mass Military Support.
And I walked over and helped out for a little bit. And had no idea you were running. And so that's how we became
friends. I don't think I did either at the time.
No, you didn't at the time. And that's how we became friends.
Yep. And your husband is a police officer.
Yes, he is.
With a dog. So it means a lot.
That sheds, I'm just going to say.
Okay, yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
So the thought is that the primary reason why Representative Exaris is here, he actually sent me a message, and he was all excited. He's like, let's talk a little bit about my... SRO bill.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that is to have police officers in every school or every school district, right? Is that the idea? So we want to talk a little bit about that. But I figure we also talk a little bit about some of your key legislative committees.
Yes.
Because you're very proud of that.
Yes, definitely.
As well as a little Nero's Law news, the training center, kind of thinking about the Gannon family.
Yes.
You were down watching the Yarmouth and Harwich firefighters being trained.
Yes.
So we can kind of talk a little bit about
Absolutely.
That.
There's so much good that's going on.
And we're going to try to condense it into 20 minutes. We're going to do our very best to do that.
But the
door is always welcome. We're thinking about renaming the show as like Legislative Corner because we usually have a good contingency.
I like to co-host every now and then.
And it comes without a warning, and it comes very much welcome. She may actually become the permanent co-host. We're actually kind of in talks right now with her people, my people.
Can you afford it?
We'll talk to Uncle Eddie about that. But so then afterwards, we're going to talk a little bit about food waste. It's kind of a big deal, knowing that if you were to take a wild guess, Representative Exaris, what do you think the global population is right at this moment? Spitball.
Global population.
Yeah, take a guess.
5 billion?
Well, you would have been right if this was 1990. Right now, we just sit a smidge over 8 billion.
Isn't that something?
$8 billion. And, you know, the more they're talking by 2050, we could be around 9.5 billion, and knowing that we keep developing and developing and open space is becoming a hot commodity, we don't have enough housing.
Right.
When will it become a problem as far as growing food? So the idea is we're going to talk a little bit about food waste.
Yes.
As we have Marianne Damasio, who is the chair of Green Hanson, we're going to talk a little bit about her initiative about food waste and why we should be a little bit more cognizant of if we go somewhere and throwing away food. We'll talk about that. Were you going to say something?
So we're also going to talk about the circular economy, which kind of tails into that,
yep,
too, when we talk about our next guest after Marianne.
And then we'll close things out on a theatrical note, as we have our friends, and they're right in the heart of Representative Lenatra's district, True Repertory Theater.
Yes.
As they actually are going to be hitting the stage come I think it's the third week of March, Rabbit Hole, directed by a good friend, Victoria Bond. I'm going to talk with them about their performance. So that's all coming up.
If this thing called civilization was going to end, I think it would have ceased during one of the two world wars. My grandparents never gave up. They worked and lived till the bitter end, which wasn't bitter at all. Actually, it was sweet. Their life was sweet. I want my life the same. I want to work, coach my kids' soccer team, go out to eat after, and then come home to my bed where I can rest my bones. Then get up and do it all again tomorrow. That's what I want, that's what I'm working for, and that is my American dream. I can't do it alone. I need you. We need each other. We're all in this together, and together we can have our American dreams. As long as we're willing to do what is necessary to survive on this marble called Earth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts and now New Hampshire. Brennan's Smoke Shop, customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back. This is Kathy Lenatra, co-hosting with Kevin Tachi tonight at Monday Night Talk. And with us tonight, we have my colleague, Representative Steve Exaros. So happy you're here.
Oh, I'm so proud, so excited. Thank you for allowing me in your district.
Well, this isn't actually my district, so I'm kind of scooting over between Pat Kearney, Representative Kearney, and Representative Cutler.
Perfect.
So I went over boundaries for a little bit, but I think they'll be okay with it.
It's all one big team.
And we also want to make sure we also mention you talked about the our 7 o'clock conversation with
Senator. State Representative, oh my God.
Senator.
Oh my gosh, State Senator Sue Moran.
From my district.
Sorry, Senator Moran.
Yes.
And my district as well.
That's
so
right.
She is my senator for three towns, and we work very well together. We were with each other last night, and we'll be with each other again tonight.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's great.
So we've brought you here, Representative Exaros. First, do you want to talk a little bit about how things are going and your new assignments? What do you have that have been handed down to you?
Yeah, it's going great. This is my second term, and I love it. It's all about service. You know, I was a cop for 40 years. I never got involved with politics, but, you know, the murder of my police officer, Sean Gannon, the shooting of his dog, K-9 Nero, led me to where we are today, and it's a blessing in a way. But this second term is going to be even better than the first. I have committees that are very powerful and personal to me. One is public safety. The other is veterans and federal affairs, which, you know, I have a military family, and I'm a Gold Star father. I lost my son, Nick, in Afghanistan. Also, a new committee that is all about behavioral health and addiction, which is a huge topic everywhere. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what district, people struggle and die, and we need to do what we can to stop that. But also ways and means, which I believe we're on that together. And that's how things get paid for. And it's very powerful to be on that committee, and I love it all.
Very much a desired committee. Very much everybody,
yes,
that's one of the top, when they're
the top
asked,
committee.
you know, okay, if you're elected, you know, or you're reelected, you know, what committee assignments would you want or seek? And that's usually one of the first ones, one of the top ones.
Yes, so I'm proud to be part of that team and looking forward to this 2-year session and getting things done.
Yeah, we're already off to a quick start. I believe this week we should be seeing the fiscal 24 budgets,
yes.
Or at least
yes.
The Governor Healy's mm-hmm. Version of the budget. The process starts.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about you witnessing something about a week ago, or a little less than a week ago, and that is you got Yarmouth and Harwich firefighters who are training. And you actually posted on your Facebook page about that. Kind of for folks who may not follow you or don't know what I'm talking about here, can you talk a little bit about what you were witnessing?
I will. 4 years ago, my officer, Sean Gannon, and our police dog, Nero, were shot by a violent criminal. Sean died. Nero was denied medical treatment because at the time, we could not treat an animal, an injured animal. EMTs, paramedics could not use their skills, and they couldn't use an ambulance. So I was standing there when our officer died, and our dog was rescued. Fortunately, he lived. But that was the moment that propelled me to run, which we did, and because of colleagues, nothing happens on your own. We were able to pass a law and make Massachusetts history. So now, a police dog injured in the line of duty has the right to be treated and transported. Humans come first, but they'll be given every chance to live. So now, not only do we pass the law, but now you have to train 20,000 people all over the state. Mm. So I've been to about 10 of them, and it's really special. One of them was at Gillette Stadium, where they trained 400 EMTs and paramedics in one day.
That's great.
I'm with Sean's mother, and on all the screens at Gillette Stadium is Sean's picture. And I said, like, how did we get here, right? It's really special. And then what you're referring to was we actually went into the Yarmouth Police Station last week. And in the building that we built in Sean's memory and named after him, we trained Yarmouth and Harwich firefighters in the Nero Law in the building that we built for Sean, with Sean's mother and father watching.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That is definitely fantastic. Interesting enough, you brought with you a stuffed animal.
Yes.
It says Frankie, it's got a vest on. Explain to me about this for folks who don't know.
Yeah, when Nero was shot, my fiance Denise, who's a nurse, she created a Nero pup who looks just like this one. And we use that to build a bridge between the public and the police. It's Nero, and it has Sean's picture on it. And we sold almost 6,000, and every penny of proceeds went to build the building that we just did the training in. So every day, police officers and dogs are in this building training that's named after Sean because of these pups raising the money. Then Canine Frankie, a state police dog, was shot by a violent criminal. He saved the lives of state troopers. He took the bullets. And that was a horrible day. And that was the first time that Nero Law was used in Massachusetts. So a dog was shot by a violent criminal, and they gave him first aid and CPR and brought him to a hospital in an ambulance. And I was in the state house, and my phone started ringing. And it was the state police telling me. And then on my way home at around 10 o'clock at night, they texted me a text that I'll never forget. It said basically, sir, we want to thank you, the men and women of the state police, for passing Nero Law. Frankie, we just left the crematorium with Frankie's body, but we knew that he was given every chance to live and he died with dignity. And that's what these laws do. And so we made a Frankie, and now Frankie's pup and his trooper handler
fantastic
is for sale, and all the proceeds go to the Mass State Police.
Would you have the information on you if there's anybody who's tuned in right now who might be able to?
Yeah, they can go to my Facebook page, Steve Exaros. It'll have it on there, or the State Police Museum page. It's another way to, like, remember a hero,
sure,
and raise money to turn a tragedy into something, a triumph. And we did the same thing with Canine Kit from your area, Braintree,
mm-hmm. right.
shot to death, saving the lives of Braintree police officers. They made a pup, and they've sold them, and now they're building a monument in his memory. So it's a way to raise some money, but really show your love for what our officers and what our police dogs do.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that. So I'm married to a police officer, as yes. you said, and he also has a dog, Valet, and we had Oliver, who passed, retired and passed. But these dogs are working along with their officers. Right. So they're really the partners. And there's no differentiation between the two. There shouldn't be.
That's right.
Right? So when we talked about this before, when Oliver retired, Oliver didn't get any benefits. He just became ours, and we took care of him. And when we love him, he's a family member. But they really do put their lives on the line for their partners.
They do. And there's 300 of them on duty in Massachusetts, day and night, serving us mm-hmm. and the officer and all of us. And to your point, so we have one of the bills this year is to create a fund when these dogs retire. And now they're with the handler. They could have some massive bills. And it's all on you and your family.
Right.
We're trying to create a fund that would pay those bills. Because these police dogs, when they retire, they should be able to be taken care of in their retirement years. And people will support that. So that's one of the bills that we filed for this year.
Speaking of bills that have been filed, and again, we're speaking with State Representative Steve Exaros.
Rep X, you can just call me
Rep X.
Rep X
yes. from the Fight.
So much
fifth.
Easier.
Yes. he is here serving the 5th Barnstable District. Interesting enough, some will talk about filing legislation February 15th. On the day that was the School Resource Officer Appreciation Day,
yes,
you filed a bill seeking to have school resource officers in each school district around yes. the Commonwealth of yes. Mass. Can we talk a little bit about
Absolutely.
This?
Absolutely. You want to keep kids safe.
Mm-hmm.
We all do. And they're educators. How you do it? You put a police officer in the school. It's really that basic. How do I know? Not from reading a study, which I've read many, but I've lived it. So 40 years as a police officer, 7 years as a school resource officer. And I went into DY High School as a police officer when it was really controversial. Why is there a police officer here?
Right.
This was 35 years ago or so. Mm. And everybody thought there must have been something bad. The police are here because something's bad. And I used to say, well, you know, there's a nurse in every school, right? Oh, yes. Does that mean everybody's sick? And they'd say, no. And I said, they're just there in case you need them. So having a police officer, a real police officer, in the schools makes a big difference. Number one, you build relationships. Those kids that were 17 or 18 or 16 are now in their 40s, and now I'm friends with their kids. Like we've made a lifetime bond. And when you're at that school as a police officer, you're not gonna let anything bad happen because that's your turf, that's your beat. So it's that part. And if you are a bad guy, which there are people out there that intend to do bad things, they have to think twice because there's a real police officer in that school. And in Massachusetts, you have to be a certified school resource officer. So I think that's a great addition. So these are real local police officers, fully trained, equipped, but they've went to extra training and passed to make sure they're the right fit for that environment. And once you have all that, it's really a real way to say, hey, we've done everything we can to make our kids safe. And until you do that, you really haven't done everything you can.
I agree with that. So I just to go further, when I first ran, which was 2 sessions ago, 5 years ago, I brought up the same thing. I wanted,
really?
I supported school resource officers in every school, and I had pushback from that. And
yeah.
people thought, well, that's too intimidating. And I have a different experience. I find that there's children in schools that don't have a mentor, that don't develop relationships. There is things going on in their home, and they don't have someone to talk to. And knowing these school resource officers that I do in my district, I know all of them, they care about these kids. Yes. They consider all these children in their school their children.
Yes.
And it's so important for them to develop a relationship, especially at a young age,
yes,
that someone in a uniform is not someone to be afraid of, right? Is not someone to run from. Right? It's someone to go to.
Yes.
So I was very strong on that when I first ran, and I'm a co-sponsor to your bill, so thank you for filing that.
Thank you. And we know it works because we've done it. Now it's normal. All over the Commonwealth and the country, our police officers in the schools, and we need to do more of that. That's how you build relationships. That's how you keep your kids and their educators safe. And it's worth every penny. What's the cost of a life? And I don't want a mass shooting or stabbing or any other horrible thing to happen in any one of our schools.
Right.
Is this the first year that this legislation has been filed? And do you sense any kind of pushback from
anybody? That's a great question. So, Rep. Lenatra is on it a little bit. When things cost money, that's always an issue. Mm-hmm. But what is a child's life worth? And again, the local towns, you know, usually work with their schools and pay for it. But to your point, is there anything else going on or any pushback? Yeah, there's a bill filed that wants every school police officer out of every school in the Commonwealth. There's an actual bill.
So you have a counter bill.
A counter bill that's the total opposite, that is not right. And we'll discuss it diplomatically. And a lot of times people don't know any better. They might think that it's a police officer like standing at the door as a guard.
And that's not what it is.
That's not what it is.
Making relationships. I was just in one of the Plymouth schools.
It's really amazing.
It is amazing.
You're giving high fives. And how I really saw it, even when I got done with school resource officer, rose to the rank of deputy chief, every Friday I would go do the Pledge of Allegiance. So I'd, you know, get in my cruiser, go to the local elementary school, and they knew Officer X was coming. They would run down the hall, hug me, and stand next to me, and we'd say the Pledge of Allegiance on the, you know, the school system. There was no hatred. There was no nerves. They love seeing the police officer, and I love seeing them.
And I think the younger, the better. Do you agree?
Yes, and
the
we younger, build that relationship.
And we just had a situation in my district with a school resource officer, and he knew he could tell somebody was struggling because he knew that student for a long time.
Absolutely.
And he may have saved that student's life. He knew he was struggling. He knew to get that student help. So it's really about building relationships.
Yes,
right?
And
it's,
really,
it's not about force, which people think, or looking for the bad kids. It's really about helping the bad kids and finding resources. No, I don't say bad kids. I'm sorry. Kids that are struggling and finding resources for those students.
I remember one kid. I'll never forget it. He was struggling, and you can tell once you can, you know, you can tell when there's a bad thing about to happen because you're there, you know it. Where an officer coming off the street doesn't see that because you build these relationships. But one of them, I knew something wasn't right. So I brought him in my office and I, you know, started to talk to him more with the guidance counselor. You become part of the team,
right.
You know. And it turns out he was homeless. So I said, where are you living? And he said, Officer X, I'm living in the bread box.
Wow.
And I said, what do you mean? He was living in the parking lot of the high school in a big wooden box that they put the bread in. And that ended that day. Because with our resources, we can get things done. But imagine if I wasn't there, that kid was in the class, and at night he would sleep in this wooden box.
Right.
And that's on Cape Cod. So those are the things you lead with your heart,
right?
And care about people. That's why we're in this position.
How is the bill doing as regards to support? Are you getting
it's brand new? Yeah, it's early, but there's 7,000 bills.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone that's listening, advocate for those that you believe in. Reach out to your rep, your senator, and say, can you support this bill? And then watch it as it goes through committee, because we can make a difference in the lives of so many people. And that's our job.
Well, it's been a fantastic visit. Bye. You're going to have you more often.
I I appreciate you asking, Kevin, and especially with Rep Lanacho. Right, we'll
So you've become the co-host now, because we're going to have him in one time.
Well, we definitely do.
Oh, we thank you for coming up from Barnstable County and joining us and talking about these items, because they're important for folks to at least get some background on them. Especially maybe there might be legislators out there who are maybe they're just hearing about this, and maybe they might sign on sometime down the road and say, hey, I heard you. You know, on WATD talking about this.
And it's true. It's all about people. We all bring our strengths. It's beautiful. There's 200 elected officials, and we bring our strengths from Pittsfield to Provincetown and all around. And one of them, for me, is public safety, and I use it to try to help others.
Well, I want to thank you for being accessible. And always, you know, anytime I've asked you to be a part of the show, you have been. So
absolutely.
Continued success.
Thank you very much, sir.
There he is, State Rep Steve X. Exaros. We want to thank you for joining us. We're going to step aside, talk a little bit about food waste. Do you waste food? We'll be right back in a moment. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, we return to Monday Night Talk. That was such a fast segment.
That was great. It went much too quickly.
And I got to tell you, like, there was, you know, between segments, when you're kind of not on the microphone, small things happen. And I want to thank Rep X, a memento that he just handed me, a star. And, wow. I don't know what to say.
It's very emotional, isn't it?
It is. It's very emotional.
Yeah.
And it has special meaning as well.
It does.
And
it
so does. Thank you, Rep X. Joining us right now is not only someone who cares about this planet, she's a good friend, she is the chairperson for Green Hansen.
Yes.
She also has her own show called The Green Scene with Miriam DiMasio. And just a few days ago, we actually shot a segment with Riley and Olivia at the Whitman Hanson Regional High School talking about the fantastic program that they are involved with and how they are trying to do, you know, trying to spread the word with their peers about food waste. And I was teasing, I don't know if you heard it or not, as to, I'll ask you, do you have any idea how many, what the global population is right now? If you were to take a wild guess, just off the top of your head.
Hit 8 billion? Oh.
Right now, it's 8,019,180,000 at this moment. The top countries with the largest population, China.
Oh, I was going to say India. Is it China? Is that second?
Well, no, it's interesting enough. So China with 1.4 billion.
Can I guess?
Go ahead.
Aren't Singapore and Nigeria up there?
So I have, I'll tell you this, who I have right now. These are country, largest countries by, 20 largest countries by population. India, 1.41. China is 1.45.
Oh, that was close.
In third, you're not going to believe this, the United States with 300 million. 330 million. And then Indonesia, Pakistan, that rounds out the top five. Hmm. Just a little over 8 billion people.
Wow.
To feed.
Yeah.
How can we think about wasting food?
Exactly.
So let's talk a little bit about this camp. Well, first, what is Green Hansen for folks who don't know?
Okay. Green Hansen, we are a local grassroots organization. Our tagline is building a sustainable community. So we focus on programs and things that we can do that bring people together at the same time that we're thinking about sustainability. So we've done a lot of things over the 15 years that we've been around, from Earth Day celebrations to Clean Up, Green Up that we have every year coming up April 29th this year, from doing, one of my favorites was the Tour de Coop, which was a tour of chicken coops that we did about 10 years ago.
Interesting.
We did a rally round recycling. So we're doing a lot of things for us to help educate and to bring people together to think about what can we do that's sustainable and green.
Let's talk a little bit about this new initiative, the food waste campaign. Mm-hmm. How did it come about? And who's spearheading this right now? Is this a national campaign right now? Or is this something that's on its grassroots? It's a local thing.
Well, it's local, but I think it's happening nationwide also. And there's an effort in the state to reduce waste and what goes into the landfill also. I think also around the country. But we at Green Hansen look for different things that we can do that can involve the community. There's a bigger picture here, which is climate change. And you don't think, oh, if I don't waste food, that will have any impact on climate change. But it does. There's a group called Drawdown that looks at solutions for mm-hmm. climate change. And food waste is one of the top. And we waste worldwide about one-third of the food that is produced, which is an astounding amount when you think of all the people who mm-hmm. are producing that food and everyone who's involved in it. That's a big...
When you think, you just said, but the population is, right?
Population is growing, and knowing mm-hmm. that we are, you know,
and
the biggest...
people are starving.
People are starving. Right. You look, we're struggling to find enough housing, mm-hmm. affordable housing, knowing that open space is getting... you know, more and more sparse, right?
And food insecurity is rising.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what? Just to go back to what does it have to do with climate change is that food waste produces methane and CO2, and those are gases that contribute to climate change. So if we don't use the food in the first place and we don't waste it, then if we're using the food, then we can reduce some of the gases for contributing to climate change.
So the two young individuals that you interviewed,
yes,
do you want to give them a little of a plug as to what they're doing?
Oh, it's great. So Green Hansen occasionally will go to the high school at Whitman Hansen and speak with the students there in the Student Environmental Awareness Club, and they're very involved. And we mentioned something about food waste, and they were already working on a few things related to that. And they said, yes, we like the idea. They thought about what they could do and decided in March, from March 6th to 10th, they're going to do a competition in the cafeteria. And cafeterias are one spot where there is a lot of food waste.
I'm sure.
Things that get thrown away, whole package were on the lunch tray but don't get eaten. So they are going to do a competition between the classes, the freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors, and weigh the waste every day and see if they can, by the end of the week, reduce some of the waste and along the way educate the students about the issues.
And these two young ladies have a little bit more tenure when it comes to initiatives. I think one of them actually assisted with a local bylaw regarding plastic bags.
Yes, it's so great. We did one in Hanson. Some of the students came to speak at our town meeting. They got very energized after speaking at that meeting, and they decided, we want to do this in Whitman, and they just took it and ran with it and got signatures for a petition, got it talked to select board members, got it onto the select board, went to town meeting, spoke at town meeting, it passed, and they have a plastic bag ban.
Oh,
so it was very, very exciting, and they got to talk about it. It was such a joy to do that show with them.
So it just goes to show that you can be any age and make change. Right?
Yes.
You don't have to be an adult to make change. Young people can make change. So that's a great lesson right there.
And they can be even more powerful, I think, sometimes than
older
people, because they speak from the heart. And mm-hmm. It was just so wonderful to interview them about what they're doing with food waste and other things.
But how encouraging is it to know that the younger generation, they realize that they are going to be the steward of this planet, the keepsake of, you know, how we're going to be able to sustain in the future, and how to make sure that you're preserving things, whether it's trees, whether it's what you're putting into landfills, that a lot of this, it matters in the long run. While it's something that's I don't care if I throw away something that's going to not biodegrade for 500 years, I'm not going to be around. They care. They realize that it's going to have a long-lasting effect.
Absolutely. It just warms my heart to hear them speak and to see that they're so energized and passionate about doing this. So really very exciting.
Now, if you had a chance to take a look at what the USDA might have for information in regards to food waste and how we, as whether it's just us three sitting here at this table, or the people who are listening at home, how they can be involved when it comes to reducing food waste.
Absolutely. USDA has a lot of information. And I'll just say for Green Handsome, what we decided to do is for the month of March, we like this title. It says, Food Waste in March? That's Madness. After March Madness Basketball.
Very clever.
We have 31 ways to reduce food waste. And so on our Facebook page at Green Hansen, we'll be having a tip every day. And they range from what are some of the things that you can do when you're out shopping to ways to cook and what to do with food afterwards. So happy to talk about a few of those if that's helpful.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. And I should say that since we've been talking about this, I'm already making some changes at home for how I do things. First of all, I would say I'm not very good about making a plan when I go shopping, and I sometimes will go hungry, so do not go to the store hungry.
Never.
Try to make a plan, and you're trying to not buy so much food when you're out, food that you're going to eat. So if you're hungry and you're like, oh gosh, I can eat all these things, and you bring it home, and then you end up wasting. So really try to make a plan, and don't go shopping hungry is one tip that some people may already do. Another is to shop your freezer. So many of us have food in the freezer that we've bought before, and again, maybe when we're hungry, maybe not, but we sometimes will forget about that in the freezer. So think about, go to your freezer first, see what kind of things are in there that you can prepare. And those, I think, are most of the things about beforehand. And then some of the others are to only try to take on your plate what you can eat. A lot of us have eyes bigger than our stomach.
My mother used to say to me when I was a kid,
your eyes are bigger than your stomach. So try not to take too much onto your plate. And then freeze, save your leftovers. Try to keep track of them, because often leftovers will go to the back of your refrigerator. Yeah. So at times you can just make the change in your refrigerator so that you're seeing what you have. And I did forget one other thing about shopping is we don't eat what they call, there's a company I think called Ugly Fruit. Imperfect fruit that looks bad, that might have a little bruise, or vegetables. So eat those. In most cases, there's nothing wrong with them. You could just take off one small piece, but there's a lot of waste from things like that where supermarkets and might need to throw that kind of food out because no one's buying it. I know my daughter for a while was signing up for, I think it's called Ugly Fruit, where you get stuff sent to you once a week, and it's the fruit that isn't always purchased by other
fruit
people.
Fruit and vegetables, but, yes.
Right,
we did that as well.
Yes. You did? Yeah. Did it work?
I think it did. And one of the things my family does is we food prep for the week.
Oh,
so
yes.
I have four children and my husband and I, and we all have different schedules with sports, there's work, there's school. And on Sundays, we have these containers that are reusable, and it splits everything up, and we food prep
for
the
great.
Week. And it really has helped us with waste, because the worst thing is being opening the refrigerator and there's like 10 things of leftovers and no one's touched them for a week.
Exactly.
So that's really helped us.
That's a great idea.
And I can say that that's the same thing in our house, as my Sandy will. She'll do the food prep for the week. If there are leftovers, well, guess who eats it? It's me. I don't have no problem with leftovers. I'm one who was always taught never to waste. But when I was a kid, maybe it was something that was said to you is, you know, there are children in other countries right now who would wish that they could have this meal in front of them, and you're fortunate enough to be able to have it, so eat it. Usually it wasn't too many times that I would sit at the table for hours. I had other siblings who would be forced to sit at the table, and you eat those peas.
I was going to say peas.
Eat those peas, those green
broccoli.
Beans, you know, or the mashed potato. You eat it. My parents
did you ever have liver
way.
And onions? Did
yes.
Yes.
It wasn't a favorite,
isn't
but...
Isn't that crazy?
Yes. Yeah. I was talking about that the other day. Not too many times people are going, I think I'll have some liver and onions
I know,
today.
You don't hear that anymore.
You don't.
Not very much.
Not something. But, no, it's interesting. And I think this is important information to put out to realize that I think we just think that this planet we live on will just keep giving and keep giving. I fear for the day that we're not able to yield enough out of our ocean because of pollution, or that we're not able to plant in the ground because there isn't enough open space to have a farm. I fear for that day. It may not be in my lifetime, but I fear for my children, my grandchildren, and their children, mm-hmm. you know, that day is going to come. And if we don't do something, and we need to do something.
Exactly. And here we are.
You know, and if that means if we're starting with food, great. But there are other ways. There are other initiatives. And you talk so many times. I've been privileged to be on the other side of a piece of production equipment when you're talking about things, whether it's, you know, I remember when you got your electric car and you were so giddy, and we did a show on it, and you spoke with somebody about this is something that's going to preserve the earth. By having, you know, by using a green energy is with an electric car. And these are things that you can find. And there's so many initiatives, if you look, that's going to help you at least when it comes to heating, when it comes to, you know, insulating your home or driving out on the roads.
Right. And there's a lot. I just listened to a webinar today, and there's a lot of incentives that are coming now through the Inflation Reduction Act. So people can get some credits, tax credits, and money back from buying some of those products too,
which is helpful.
Yeah.
What is some of the wet news? Is there anything else you wanted to mention while we have a couple of moments here with you?
Sure, a couple of things. Just about afterwards, if you have too much food, you went to the store hungry, you bought too much, you ate too much. There's things like just sharing. We often will share food with neighbors, give to the food pantry, and then finally, if you have too much and you don't want to throw it out, composting is a really good thing. It reduces the amount of methane that's produced. Instead of throwing it in a landfill, you could just make a little box in your backyard and put everything out there. So that's one thing that people can do. You can't put out dairy and meat, but we have compost. We've been doing it for years, and when the worms get through with it, it is beautiful soil that you can use in your garden.
And you're somebody who has probably one of the best gardens on the South Shore.
I wouldn't say that, Kevin. We have a good garden. When I moved into the house.
I've had a few things from that garden, and I beg to differ. So
it's a good garden.
It's a very good garden.
Yes, and I'll say one other thing about food waste is the dates on the products. Except for infant formula, it does not have anything to do with safety. It is a best used by date. So there are many things that you can still eat after those dates if you check that they're not spoiled. So that's just one other thing about.
That's an important thing, actually, because a lot of people look through their cabinets and see the date and just throw it out.
Right.
Instead of
looking, is it still
right,
good?
Right, is it still good?
Anything else as we get ready to wrap up this segment and the first hour of Monday Night Talk?
I would just say it's great to be here to be talking about this topic. It has so many different pieces to it, and it's something that people can easily do at home. So if you're interested in following our tips, to just go to Facebook and look up Green Hansen, and we'll be posting every day for March. 31 days of tips.
The madness.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Well, Marianne, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me here tonight. I appreciate it.
So good to see you.
Marianne Damasio. She is the chair of Green Hand, so some great tips this evening. That's it, Kathy.
First hour flew.
Gone. Wow. Hour number two, straight ahead. Don't go anywhere as we have
State Senator Sue Moran
on deck. You're tuned in to Monday Night Talk. Stay tuned.
FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back. Again, this is State Representative Kathy Lenatra co-hosting here with Kevin Tachi this evening. And so happy to announce our next guest.
Who is it?
It is State Senator Susan Moran. Hello, Senator.
Hello, Rep. Lenatra. So great to be here with you this evening. What a great show.
Oh, thank you. I can't take credit for planning it, but I'm happy to show up and partake.
So I guess right out of the gate, how are things going? Here we are in the new legislative session. I believe you guys that there was a small contingency at the aquarium to make a little bit of an announcement. Can you share the details?
Sure. Should I take this, Rep?
You should take this.
I think you should take it.
Oh, great. Well, let me just kind of launch the boat here, so to speak, before we get to the aquarium, with the fact that I am so proud to be part of the delegation with Rep. Lenatra. We are from different branches of the legislature, so it allows us to really collaborate and cover so many things. We support each other in various initiatives. We sort of, talk about who will be the, sort of the leading force in one issue or another for the district, and it's really been terrific and I think very powerful. And the blue economy is one of those initiatives. You know, we Kathy and I were both sort of targeted, let's say, by the aquarium to lead a brand new initiative by them and to really look at the future blue economy. And we collaborated. I'll give a little bit of an outline and then pass it to Rep. Lenatra. The future blue economy that I filed in the Senate, it's Senate 1689, and it's going to establish three grant programs to foster investment in expanding educational and career development resources in the realm of marine technology. So many of our towns are surrounded by water. Part of the economy grows from the water, and we want to be sure that we give tools and support to the next generation. So part of this funds local high schools to introduce just high school students to blue STEAM jobs. That's STEAM. Expanding trained workforce, establishes funding to incentivize research and technological development by nonprofits, including academic, and it improves the health of our oceans in the long term, putting all these smart brains and resources, and then kind of adding small businesses to that initiative. So we do things like including the circular economy so that we're sure that our ocean waste is reduced. And we're looking at the program not costing a dime, but just look, you know, sort of taking funding from identified federal grant programs so that we can ensure the next generation has ecosystems and marine species that are protected and not harmed.
That's right. And just a tale there on the circular economy, one of the bills that I filed focuses on the circular economy. And a lot of people may say, what the heck is a circular economy, right? So that is one that keeps materials and products and services in circulation for as long as possible, kind of tailing on food waste, right? So now it's just waste in general. And that, and people ask, why does that matter? Well, natural resource extraction and processing contributes to about half of all global greenhouse gas emissions.
Goodness.
And it's crucial, you know, that we break that cycle of single use and wasted process and products.
You're so right. And this is something that, you know, kids are probably more used to than adults. So this is can be a great family conversation, you know, on family night or just really promoting the efforts that I see a lot of young people really spearheading.
And I want to kind of just throw out there is that the senator used the term STEAM, that, of course, is an acronym for science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Why does the art matter here? Because don't forget we have STEM, which would be minus the art. Can I ask that question?
Sure. It, you know, it dovetails with something that we did right in the State House Senate lobby this week. We had the Mashpee Wampanoag folks there to display the art for the month, and including a drum circle right in the Senate chamber. And it was a bit of a kickoff in the fact that, you know, our students and young people all have different strengths. And looking at the arts, fundamentally for our tourism-based economy in the Plymouth-Barnstable District, it actually translates into huge dollars. And we want to be sure that we support those efforts along with all of the other bright science initiatives that, you know, the students on the other end of interest to partake in. So it's sort of, you know, it's very inclusive and looks to everyone's talents.
Why was it so important to have such a large contingency? Because a contingency that's a part of this legislation where it's, you know, you got Representative Lenatre, yourself, Senator Moran, but then you also have Rep. Cutler,
yes.
Rep. Kearney, and they kind of bring, they have brought some of the language to this Blue Initiative.
You know, Josh has done terrific forward thinking. He's got a whales bill that we're doing together, and I'm going to kick it to Kathy on the workforce and sort of Plymouth-centered marketplace work that you both have been partnering in.
Yes, so Rep. Cutler is also the chair of Workforce and Development. So this is really his bailiwick, and he's just done a tremendous job. We also have Rep. Jessica Giannino, who is new to the legislature, doing a major job here with the aquarium, and also Senator Julian Sear and Dylan Fernandez, who are more from the Cape. Senator Moran works with Julian Sear, and I believe Dylan, too. No, he's under...
Yes.
They're doing tremendous things, too. And, you know, we're all... All of us are on a coastal, we have a coastal district, or parts of the towns are part of the coast. So it's important to us, not only for workforce, to, you know, for keeping it clean, but the circular economy as well. So we do have Plymouth, but we talked about the arts. It's so important down here in Plymouth. We have so many little things. We have the Plymouth Arts Center, we have the Spire Center, we have Memorial Hall. There's so many things that are entailed in this blue economy that affects all of us.
It's a different draw for a different market, and it's a particular thrill for me being sort of four towns on each side of the Cape Cod Canal because we've, you know, for a while we've had the scientific organizations on the Cape side of the district, Woods Hole Oceanographic, NOAA, and we're bumping it right in Cordage Park. We have some outgrowth of blue and green economy. Businesses are terrifically ingenuitive and smart, and now kicking it up to the aquarium, really, who, you know, they've been leaders in the ecology and preservation and care of marine life and animals, and to have them, you know, sort of be part of that nexus is, I think, really just strengthening the foundation of the blue economy.
So the thing that I want to kind of, I want to dovetail, because prior to this conversation, Senator, we were talking about food waste. We were concerning ourselves with preserving our resources. And one of the things that I said inadvertently during the conversation was, one of the things I worry about is being able to still, we look at the vastness of the ocean and think that there's, you know, it's going to be a never-ending source for when it comes to putting food on the table. But the biggest problem that we are dealing with is plastic waste that ends up in the ocean. What can legislation that's being crafted here in the Commonwealth do to at least cut into some of that waste that we're seeing in our oceans and on our coastlines?
Well, you know, we're really kind of listening to the next generation. When people throw waste in the ocean, you know, they think it just disappears.
Yep.
And it's really tragic sometimes when marine animals get caught in lines and trash, and, you know, it puts them in danger. And so this focus in sort of lifting up and really spotlighting the blue economy has a parallel effect of really making us pay attention to our own actions. We're also in the Senate, I've just put in legislation to promote natural carbon sequestration. And that's a no-net loss goal, where the current climate policies talk about, you know, kind of keeping things at a tolerable level, but we are continuing to pollute. And the effort at Senate 1700 is going to be to have no-net loss, where we direct a plan for a net gain for the state lands for carbon sequestration that uses our current forests, salt marshes, estuaries, and, you know, all of which are, you know, taking care of our carbon right now. So this partnership that Rep. LaNatra and the delegation that she mentioned have put together really kind of looks at stopping what we're doing right now, paying attention. And I think, Kevin, that's what you put your finger right on.
Yeah, and again, and that was actually, you anticipated my next question, and that was, let's talk a little bit about the benefits of blue carbon. And you actually, you know, hit the nail right on the head talking about, you know, the Bill 1700 and that piece of legislation, and being able to capture the CO2 naturally, if there is such a way. Anything else we want to make sure we mention in regards to this piece, whether it's you, Senator, or you, Kathy?
So, this legislation, it's a crucial piece in Massachusetts. It will be hitting the roadmap 2050 goals of achieving net zero by 2050, you know, as well as our interim goals of 50% lower by 2030 and 75% lower by 2040 from the 1990 levels. So, you know, now is the time. As you said, the younger generation, who we had before, talked about some of her students. They're really, this is their bailiwick, right? So we're learning a lot from them, which is really exciting to talk to them and hear their ideas and what they're thinking. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about kelp farming,
please,
which is really helping. We're looking at bringing that down to Plymouth. And our oyster farms, we have the best oysters in the world here, and we need to keep that up. We need to really support our oyster farmers, and this legislation is crucial for that.
Senator?
I agree. And, you know, kelp farmers, there are so many products that come from that, not only food, but soaps, and, you know, really, if you look at the agricultural history of the Plymouth Barnstable District, well, it, you know, it cranberry certainly, it's an important area to really continue to support and to really look at innovative ways that the next generation is using the ocean as well.
And is, will there need to be any state dollars? Are we looking to create grant funding, or is this just a matter of initiatives to at least start the ball rolling when it comes to the blue economy?
Well, I know that I can speak with my municipal experience. In Falmouth, we did some support of the permitting for kelp and shellfish farmers, and ultimately ended up with a pretty, you know, small-sized booming little economy where we had really the benefit of the oysters cleaning the water. We had terrific seedlings and also a tourism benefit where families could, you know, get their permits and go in and actually continue the tradition of actually bringing oysters right out of the ocean to the table. So municipally, it can be town-by-town supported, and we look to the state in terms of some available grant funding.
Anything you want to follow up with on that?
I'm just really excited to be working with the New England Aquarium and Senator Moran and my other colleagues, and this legislation is really going to move Massachusetts towards a nice circular economy, and I'm really excited about it.
Again, we are speaking with State Senator Susan Moran. She is our guest, and we're talking about, you know, this new initiative. But we're also willing to talk about other things, whether there's committee assignments you want to talk about or anything that's good going on in the district, or any news that you may want to share with our listeners, Senator.
Oh, absolutely. This is such a not only a fun opportunity to chat, but a good opportunity to get information out. I know for my part, I am absolutely thrilled to be the chair of revenue. It is going to be a pivotal position on the Senate side between the Senate president, the chair of Ways and Means. Every bill having to do with money will go through my joint committee along with Rep. Cusack. Typically, revenue gets more bills than any other committee, I think over 500 last session, anything from tax breaks and initiatives to local option taxes and abatements. Estate tax is already been raised this year. You know, many folks have humble lives, but you know, they're home to the majority of their wealth, and they want to pass that wealth along to their children, and the current tax code makes that challenging. As revenue chair, I'm also going to sit on the Tax Expenditure Review Commission, which is going to review every tax expenditure the government offers. For example, film tax credits. So it should be really interesting. I'm going to remain on the Consumer Protection and Public Licensure Joint Committee, which did all the outdoor restaurant licensing last year, for example. And I'm going to continue on transportation and financial services, economic development, and cannabis. So a lot of kind of business oriented, getting people to work, those kinds of concerns, and it's so dovetails with what the governor has just put out as her proposed fiscal year 2024 budget, especially the estate tax proposal to eliminate tax on estates under $3 million. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. And Rep. Lenatra, I know you've got great committee opportunities as well.
I do. But I'm so grateful for the vital committees that you're on, so I have all that guidance and mentorship. I can continue with that this session. But I was very pleased and grateful and was named Vice Chair of Healthcare Finance in the House. And I continue to serve on the Joint Committee of Ways and Means and with you on economic development, which is very dear to my heart, being a small business owner and so forth. So I'm very excited. It's going to be a busy session, and we're hoping to get a lot of work done and a lot of bills passed through our committees. So I'm very excited.
I think I want to ask both of you, you know, knowing that we're going to be seeing the governor's budget, any thoughts? I mean, what are some of the things you've seen, you know, a few budgets during your time? Any anticipation here what we might see, or is it just a matter of let's wait and see what happens and see if this is going to be something that's going to breach $50 billion and what new initiatives it might bring forth?
You know, I think we're going to appreciate the fact that the governor and lieutenant governor have really focused on, you know, the day-to-day lives of families. There's a proposal for a $600 credit per family for qualifying dependent, including children. So that would go up if you have more qualifying dependents, such as children. So that's huge on child care, just so that people, as they come back to work after COVID, can really afford to go, you know, sort of develop and go back to their careers the way they had originally planned, whether it helps with utilities or other costs. I think that was a great thing to target, and that would help a wide variety of folks. And, you know, also rent deductions. That's going to be increased. It's currently capped at $3,000. It's going to go up to $4,000 in the governor's plan that we will review. There's going to be a reduction in the tax rate on short-term capital gains from 5% to 12%. That's going to reduce that tax rate. So, you know, we'll see where this goes, but I think these were some interesting proposals, and the fact that the lieutenant governor comes from municipal administration and with the governor's work over the years on just for consumers and families, I think we're going to see a bit of a tilt toward some things that will target immediate relief, and hopefully it looks to me right now like, you know, very straightforward, not too complicated, some things that will immediately lift up the communities.
I agree. And what I see with this new administration, the governor and lieutenant governor, they want to keep people in Massachusetts. They want to make it affordable for families to live here. They want children to stay here instead of leaving because they can't afford it, instead of just being educated here and then moving out because they can't afford it. Keep them here. Keep the talent here in Massachusetts. And that's what I hear from them. And I really am looking forward to seeing the budget. I will be at the address on Thursday morning. Looking forward to that when she addresses the Boston Chamber and seeing what she has to say then.
Is there a sense of excitement between you two?
I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm really bubbling. I feel like there's so many opportunities to, you know, be on a springboard here, and that investments right now are meant to springboard other positive fiscal benefits going forward. And I think also the newly elected folks have just pitched right in. And certainly Plymouth Barnstable District, Kathy and I and all of us are, you know, we're really, it's almost like being let out of the gate from the COVID and dealing with one emergency after another to really look at crafting some important help for our communities.
I agree. You know, during COVID, it was so reactive. We didn't know what was coming next, and it was one fire after another. And now it's a chance for us to all be proactive. And I think we all feel that.
I definitely agree. If I could ask you, Senator, if folks want to reach out to you within your district, constituent services, how can folks do that?
You know, it will just take emails direct at susan.moran@massmasenate.gov. So we're on right on the legislative website of Massachusetts. Email us. There's also phone numbers there. We want to hear from you. We're putting together our own budgets, and we want communities' ideas for where money should go. I've been doing, for example, an opioid forum. I had over 60 folks come, including law enforcement, human services, treatment folks, and looking at, you know, ideas for where SACWA money might be targeted so that we can really get a little bit of more traction in this opioid scourge that has terrible human cost along with an economic cost.
Well, I want to thank you again for joining us and for being our guest on the Tachi and Lenatra show.
You know what? ATD, Kevin, Lenatra, this is where it's happening. So it's great information and really enjoyable to listen to.
Well, we appreciate guests like you who want to come in, share information, and some of the work that they're doing on behalf of the residents of Massachusetts.
Thank you. Proud to be doing that.
You got it.
Thank you, Senator.
All right, so we're gonna step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Don't miss the Just Steph Show every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. for fun guests and tips on living your best life every day. I'm bringing sexy back to Monday nights.
Tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
So we're back for the final segment of Monday Night Talk. It's funny. It's just like the breaks just aren't long enough.
They're
like
you too
start,
quick.
It's like you just start picking up speed with explaining something. It's like, we're back. Just like that. Our next guests, you pull that right close to yourself, Donald.
There it is.
Donald Sheen, of course, the artistic director for True Repertory Theater, and Victoria Bond.
Hello, darling.
Both are great friends and have been here to discuss countless productions. Mm. They trust to come in to at least be able to get the word out about some of their works. Mm-hmm. How are things over at the True Rep?
Things are going well.
You got to talk? I'll talk.
The True Rep is doing well. We're doing well. We're working on our next production, which is very exciting. It is a play called Rabbit Hole by David Lindsay Abaire. And it's a serious, it's on the serious side, but he also has this wonderful ability to kind of find humor, even when we're in our sort of saddest moments. And that's very true to life, I think.
And so, you're directing this.
I am directing this.
Wow. Now, what have you directed in the past? Or is this is not a directorial debut as far as True Rep, is it?
Well, as far as True Rep goes, okay. Yes, it is.
See what I did?
This is the first. I see what you did there.
Carefully chose my words.
You did. You're good that way. This is the first show I've directed for True Rep. That's true. So, yes. Yep. Donald dragged me in.
How'd you do it, Donald? What was your secret, Donald?
Begging for 2 years. To try to get her to direct something, yeah.
So here I am. It's actually a lovely play. I'm glad. I'm happy to be directing it. To be honest with you, it's really an incredibly well written play. It's 4 scenes in Act 1, 4 scenes in Act 2. Structurally, it's a beautiful play.
And
as far as the characters go, he's a really great playwright. This play won the 2007 Pulitzer Prize for drama. It ran on Broadway, starring Cynthia Nixon and Tyne Daly.
Cagney Lacey.
Yeah.
We think it.
I like.
So it's a great show. It really is, and I think it's a great show to be doing right now because it really deals with how people deal with grief
and how we deal with it so differently from one person to the next. You know, and this is a couple that's mourning a loss, and they both have very different ways of going through that process. And you know, it really kind of focuses on how different grief can be from person to person. And it's something that, you know, given the past couple of years and what we've been through, you would think we would be better at grief than we are as a culture and as a community. So we've been through a lot of grief. So I think it's a timely and appropriate play for this moment, to be honest with you. So, and we made a great connection. Do you want to talk about the connection we made through Project 719?
So yeah, with the Project 719. So this is our community-based outreach program, and with every production that we do, thematically, we try to find something related to the show and tie that to an organization within the community. And with this one, it was actually quite easy because mm-hmm. they're actually right in our backyard. So it's actually Hope Floats.
Oh, yes.
And they are literally right in our backyards.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
They really are. They came in and spoke to us 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, one of the counselors came and talked to the cast about grief, and because of what they do, for those who don't know, Hope Floats is a grief and wellness center. So they help people navigate grief. And they have something, I don't even remember the number, I want to say it was like 17 different...
like 20 different programs.
Or 20 different groups that are... They're groups that meet for, you know, different ages, for women, for men, for, you know, if you're grieving a pet, if you're grieving a parent, if you're grieving, you know, a spouse or a partner. You know, they have LGBTQ groups. And all that group work they offer free of charge. You know, if you want to see counselors separately and, you know, individually, then, you know, they can help you go through that, and that's separate. But it's just it's a tremendous thing that they do. It's an unbelievable resource for the community, and they can't come up for air. They're so busy. They can't, you know, I mean, it was hard for them to even to make the time for us. And I so appreciate that they did, because they really helped to shed a light, you know, for the cast and for myself, with regard to, you know, the play as it sits and what it's dealing with. They're a tremendous, tremendous resource.
Yeah, they are. They've been in Kingston for quite a while, and I've met with them, and I've met some of their facilitators of groups, and this happened to be a parent of a child, so they do a lot with a loss of a child, and they deal with everything, and they have been such a help to so many people. They also have a fundraiser every year, The Walk, which is really important. Mm-hmm. We should bring that up when that comes up. But,
indeed.
I mean, grief, when you say we should deal better with it after all we've been through, but I think each death is such a surprise sometimes. Mm-hmm. And grief, there's so, like you said, so many people deal with it differently. And mm-hmm. we had a loss in our family in July, and how we all dealt with it at different stages. But sometimes you have to have humor. Like you said, like you have to have humor in that. And that's what gets us through. I think that's what's got my family through, is having a little humor about it. Of course, we're sad, we're devastated, and we have our moments, but having that humor and continuing to talk about that person, I think, is so important, instead of let's not talk about them anymore, that, you know, right. And keeping their spirit alive, I think, is so important.
I agree. I agree completely. And I think it does become very difficult when it's the loss of a child, because I think that there's just so much more, I don't want to say baggage, but to some extent, yeah, there's a lot of weight.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff involved with that. And certainly this play deals with that issue. They've lost a child, you know, so that's what they're dealing with. I just noticed for myself, as a parent, with everything through COVID, and kind of watching how the schools dealt with it, and they certainly did the best that they could.
Right.
But it's one of those issues that I wish that, you know, I don't know, I wish we sort of dealt with it, I don't know, in a more open way, or, you know, or introduced children to it maybe before they actually experience it.
And we were all grieving COVID.
Yeah.
When you think of it, we're grieving the loss of the kids from school, from seeing the grandparents,
absolutely.
And so on. And so we've all dealt with grief in that way.
We have,
not
and
an
on
actual
a communal
loss of a person.
Level.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Yes, I agree.
So, yeah, which is, again, one of the reasons that we wanted to do this show right now.
Because I'm looking
it does
forward
feel,
to it.
Yeah.
How do you feel, I'm going to ask Donald this first, as the artistic director, how do you feel that the theater company has rebounded and been able to endure a pandemic like this? In your opinion, because I'm going to ask, I want to hear Victoria and her opinion on this.
Sure. Well, I think during the pandemic itself, there was we definitely kept the momentum going. We had meetings, we had Zoom meetings, things of that nature. We were, you know, there were projects we were discussing. Nothing necessarily ever really came to fruition. However, once things were sort of getting back to some sense of normalcy, the first thing that we did, because it was, I think when we started feeling safe was right around summertime, about a year and a half or so ago. And we, the first production that we did was an outdoor production of Into the Woods down at Gray's Beach.
Yeah.
So, you know, the momentum definitely kept going. We were in conversation. Like I said, we were having meetings just to keep everyone involved and engaged. So I think we did a good job of it. I think the actors, you know, we have a resident company of actors. So, you know, the actors that you see in any of our productions are the ones that are there throughout the year. Some of them have been there 5 and 6 years. And when this all happened, they all kind of looked to us and said, okay, how are we going to sort of navigate these waters and figure this out? And even though we knew we wouldn't be able to do a production, we knew that there were ways that we could stay engaged. So we did stay together as a group and as a family and mm-hmm. just sort of worked through it. And when we knew it was safe to get back out there, we did. And to err on the side of caution, we said, let's just start with an outdoor production of a musical, entertainment, something that, you know, people for to be able to come back out of this and to see something fun and entertaining that also had some edge to it and some serious tones as well. So, mm-hmm. and, you know, we had great turnout for it. And, you know, we're still dealing with COVID now,
sure.
you know, and just trying to remain safe and putting guidelines in place for everyone where we're now back indoors. There have been times where we're still socially distancing audience and things of that nature. So it's still present in our minds, and we're mm-hmm. always thoughtful of that.
It will be for some time, I think.
It's our
I
new
think
normal.
So.
Absolutely.
I believe
it's our
it will
new
be.
Normal. Right. Right.
Victoria?
Yeah. Well, I think that the thing that I find most difficult is that we have a greater need now as a company for community support than we did in years past. And certain things have happened that, listen, it's just the nature of the beast, but, you know, let's just take rights, for instance. So when you do a play, you go, you get the rights. They used to cost, on average, $60 a night, maybe $75 a night. If you were doing Neil Simon, it might be $125 a night, but that was extreme. They've raised all of the rates. So the rights now, on average, are a minimum of $125 a night, no matter what you're doing.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes often above that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're requiring that you purchase bound scripts from them for an additional fee. And they're requiring sometimes that there's music that an author might mention in a play. Now you have to buy the rights for the music as well, whether you want to use it or not. So there's just, it's become much more costly.
So everybody wants theirs and then some.
Right, and right. I get it. Everybody hurts because, you know, the theater was shut down for a couple of years. I get it. But the small community theater is the wrong place to be drilling for oil.
Yeah.
You know, the small community theater exists solely on passion. It is people that volunteer their time, and they do it for the love of the thing and because they believe in it. Nobody's making money off of community theater. And so, you know, to be getting nickeled and dimed, it's painful. And there, you know, we really do have to look at sort of fundraising efforts that are more sustained and sustainable. And we need the community. If you care about community theater, we absolutely need your support. And we're not the only community theater. Every community theater out there needs your support.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, please, if you don't want to donate to us, donate to one of the other ones, because every community should have access to reasonably, affordable, good entertainment that's live entertainment.
Would a community, I see different organizations, community organizations, that are allowed to get grant funding through the Mass Cultural Council.
I was just going to mention Mass Cultural.
Is that something that you can tap into that local theater companies, yes. Or are they?
No, you can absolutely, and we do.
Okay,
we do, and there are a couple of towns that have supported us. You know, we can thank town of Kingston,
town of Hanson, town of Plymouth.
Middleborough. Yeah, exactly. So, but there's such a need out there right now, yeah, that it's very competitive. There are dollars out there, but it's wildly competitive. I mean, there was sort of a windfall of COVID money that came in Mass Cultural Council, and they had all kinds of grants that they, you know, had out there. There was such a demand, so many applications went in that, you know, you were hard pressed.
There will be funds that we just had some grants come through for the sports wagering. Right. So those grants will start coming through. Okay. There was $3 billion, I believe, that just came through with grants. So that you'll start to see more of that. But you're right. I mean, you need to support your local community.
It's true.
You need to support our arts or we're going to lose them. And it's very important.
It's true.
And you know what's fantastic? That voice you just heard, actually, and we didn't realize this until, you know, the mics were off for a couple of seconds and they walked into the room. But that Rep Lenatra actually attended, through happenstance, one of True Rep Authority.
I did. Misery.
Misery. Mm-hmm. So we've got a fan here and somebody who speaks the gospel when it comes
fan,
to it.
Huge fan. And my friend, Mark Reed, starred in Misery. He was amazing. Mm-hmm. And the actress, oh my God.
Chris Bailey is her name.
She was fantastic. And honestly, it stuck with me for weeks. That good. And funny enough, I went by myself because I like to go to theater by myself so I can really concentrate. And in comes a friend that I grew up with in Hanover that I hadn't seen in years.
Oh, you're kidding.
Because she's a Misery fan.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
We really enjoyed it.
Great.
And I'm really looking forward to this. And this will be at the Beale House as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we open March 17th.
Oh, it's right around the corner.
It is
St. Patrick's Day.
It is right around the corner.
Couple weeks.
Yeah, and we have a lot of things sort of planned in the future as well. So, I mean, we have a production after Rabbit Hole finishes up. We're jumping right into another production.
It might be good if there's a moment to sort of mention that next production and what's kind of going on there.
Absolutely, but let me tease the folks at home about this production that we're talking about, of Rabbit Hole at the Beale House, 222 Main Street, where State Rep Kathy Lenatra actually attended a production. This is going to be in Kingston on March 17th and 18th, 24th. Let me correct that. 17th, 18th, and 19th, and then you have those... and then the 19th, goodness gracious, what's wrong with me here? Let me try one more time.
Okay.
One more time, and then...
taking over if you can't get it right.
So you have 8 p.m. productions on the 17th, 18th, and 24th. That's at 8 p.m.
Yes.
Then you have 3 p.m. productions on March 19th, 25th, and 26th.
Yes.
I should have done it like that.
Yes.
So you have the evening productions, and then you have the matinees.
So we have 3 8 p.m. performances and 3 matinees.
Yes.
So, the matinees are on, the Saturday and the 2 Sundays. The last Saturday and the 2 Sundays. Sundays will all be matinees. The first Friday, Saturday, and the second Friday will all be at 8 p.m.
Go ahead. Yeah. I was going to say, tickets are $25 for general admission and $22 for seniors and students and folks. I would strongly suggest that you buy your tickets at www.true, T-R-U-E, Rep Theater, and that's theatre.com. Also, there will be tickets at the door, am I correct?
Absolutely.
Cash and check only.
Yes, we can't take credit cards at the door yet.
We can do Venmo.
Yeah, we can do Venmo.
We can do Venmo. Those three.
We Venmo.
We've stepped it up a little bit. Now we're doing Venmo, too.
So Donald wants to tease the next production already.
Yeah, if that's okay, because we're sort of simultaneously working on that, and we actually have informational meeting / audition that's coming up this coming Sunday, March 5th, for anyone that might be interested. So we are doing a production of The Wizard of Oz. And
is there a Dorothy
I'm
in the room?
I'm so excited.
So we have an actor.
Who?
Glenda. Okay. All right, Linda, go ahead.
Sorry. Yes. No. There's an actor within our company who has seen, there's a company up in Acton, Mass. Called Open Doors Theater, who have done these types of productions, and she's been talking to me about them for years, and I'm like, we really need to bring this to the South Shore. So what it is that we're going to be doing, again, as part of our Project 719, we're going to be holding this meeting this coming Sunday to involve actors with... Well, let's just say we're hoping to make this an all-inclusive production. Mm-hmm. So we are encouraging and hoping that people, actors with developmental disabilities, differing abilities, LGBTQ, from every single ethnic background that is out there will come to this meeting and hopefully join this cast. So it's something... Again, that's been on our radar now for a couple of years. We've been putting it out there on social media to let people know about the meeting. It'll take place at the Beale House, again, 222 Main Street in Kingston, this coming Sunday, March 5th, and the meeting starts at 3:30. So we would love for everyone to attend.
And it's a chance for everybody to just get some information to talk about how we're going to go about doing this and what the rehearsal schedule will be, what the performance schedule will be. And people that are interested in participating can simply attend the meeting. There will be an audition portion after the meeting is over for people that are looking to have solos.
Right.
You know, there is a couple of, a group of ensemble adults that we'll need, and they will have some solo work. And then we also are going to be auditioning children for the Munchkins. Mm. So any Munchkin that would want to have a solo.
But if they're not looking for a solo and they just want to come and be in the show, they're in the show.
Yes, they just come to the meeting and we'll talk about it. And they absolutely are welcome to participate.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And when do you plan? When could this possibly be hitting the stage?
It goes up in May. It's either the 17th or the 19th. Is that Friday? I'm not sure which it is. But it's that weekend and the weekend afterwards. There'll be six performances of that as well.
Okay. Right. If we could digress back to the rabbit hole.
Yes.
Okay. Sure.
You play the role of Howie.
I do.
Talk to me about Howie.
This is a show and a role that I've wanted to do for quite some time. And like Victoria said, I think it's perfect timing for us to be doing this. You know, Howie is the husband to Becca, and their marriage is incredibly strained because they're really going in two very different directions in terms of how it is that they're dealing with their grief. Howie has been attending meetings, to sort of work his way past this grief. I think he's a little bit more, I don't know if I would necessarily call him an optimist. I'm not sure if that's the right word. But I think one of the things that he tries to do with his wife is to navigate through this grief together. But again, because they're in such different places about their son's death, they just keep missing each other every time they try to start to come together. And it's not that he's not grieving, again, and this is really the whole point of the show. It's just that he's dealing in a very different way with his grief than his wife is. So it really calls into play, the possibility of divorce, what's going on in their marriage, infidelity, things of that nature. So it brings up a lot of different and interesting subject matters. And it's... Victoria's done a wonderful job really kind of pulling this play apart and really examining it moment to moment and starting to put it back together. There's a lot of potential pitfalls with a show like this, especially from an acting perspective, that where the subject matter is so heavy, it could really become a dirge, if you will.
And it's not. And the playwright was very clear about that in how he wrote it, and that's not what he wants to have happen with it.
And your interpretation is very much needed, then, is what you're saying. You're interpreting what the playwright is saying and trying to at least make sure that...
And he's been very clear and very vocal about how he really does not want...
It's marked in the script.
It would be such a depressing... night of theater if
and you don't want
if
that.
People indulged in, no. in all of mm-hmm. that. And it's not what it's about, and it's not what it is. And there actually is quite a bit of humor. Surprising
of
humor.
Yes.
But it's very relatable. But a lot of this relatable. What's happening is very relatable.
It's very relatable. And they're very relatable characters. They really are. David Lindsay Abaire had at one point took a class with Marsha Norman, who said, if you want to write a play, you should write about the thing that frightens you most. Yeah. And it was not until he became a parent. He said, I became a parent and I suddenly knew what real fear is. And that is when he wrote this play.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And and it was really just sort of exercising his fear to some extent. Any parent can relate to this. It's, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, and non-parents as well. It's not exclusive to parents.
No, it's not. It's not. Well, I mean, I think you
because
can.
And that's part of the play, too, is it's not just, you know, the two parents that are grieving the loss of their son. It's their, you know, the grandmother. It's the aunt. The child was accidentally hit by a car is how he dies. And the person who hit him in the car is in the play. We meet him, too. And how it affects him. And how he's dealing mm-hmm. with it. And so it's just an incredibly well done. It's very witty, very poignant. And a lovely evening. I really do believe it'll be a lovely evening.
And you could either go, if you're going to the 8 o'clock show, you could have dinner locally at one of our local restaurants in Kingston or Plymouth, some great restaurants in North Plymouth, as well as Kingston. And if you're going to the matinee right after, that's what I plan on doing. I'm Absolutely. A matinee person.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I'll have dinner afterwards. Yeah.
This is why we added a matinee. We used to do 4 evening performances and only 2 matinees. We added a matinee. We converted one of our evening performances to a matinee.
I love a matinee.
Yeah. And I think it's especially at this time of year when mm-hmm. it gets dark earlier, it's better.
Anything else you want to mention? Anybody you want to maybe mention about some of the other cast members, some of the other players who are part of this? Donald?
Sure. Yes, thank you, Kevin.
It's a very talented cast.
It is. It's a small cast. It's 5 people compared to some of the other shows that we've recently done. Mm-hmm. We have a gentleman named Patrick McCarthy who's done a couple of productions with us. He's been with us just since this past September. He plays Jason. We have Lyra Brennan, who plays Becca, the wife. Mm-hmm. We have Sarah Gruber. Gruba. Where
Gruber.
Did that come from?
I don't know.
Gruber.
Gruber. It came from the South Shore.
It sure did.
That's where it came
yeah,
from.
Yeah, that's where
Gruber.
It came from.
Gruber. Sarah Gruber. She's so funny. I love her so much.
She's probably cursing me right now.
That's awesome.
Boy, oh boy.
That was good.
That? Gruber. She plays Izzy, who is Becca's sister. And then Lisa Karen Driscoll, who has been with us forever, plays Nat, who is Becca's mother. So we have a couple of newcomers, which is great, and a few people that have been with us for quite some time. Yeah. And really talented cast. Very fortunate to be able to bring this group together. So,
mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you two for coming in, talking a little bit about this production. I know there's a little bit of a mix-up that was kind of on my end. Sometimes I juggle one too many balls, and I go, oh, wait, was it supposed to be 4 or 5? And then it comes to me. So I know you and I were back That's and okay. forth. I'm like, going, is it this? And you're like, no. We're like, well, we got things going on. It's, This date right here. You actually, when you did that little bit there a second ago about the South Shore thing, I thought of the your cousin from Boston. You know, the little, you know, like, oh, you'll go ahead, you'll pack this. Like, it was actually really good. Again, if you have a chance, purchase tickets to see The Rabbit Hole. You will not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed. At the Beale House, 222 Main Street in Kingston. If you want to go to the 8 p.m. show, there are tickets available for March 17th, 18th, and the 24th. Or if you're a matinee person like
myself,
like the representative, you have March 19th, 25th, and 26th. Don't forget tickets, $25 general admission. If you are a senior or a student, it is $22. Buy tickets, www.truereptheater.com, TrueRepTheatre.com. Remember, if you show up the day of the show, cash and check only.
Or Venmo.
That's right. Thank you.
And Venmo.
Venmo. Yes. And they can check out our Facebook page if they want information about the Wizard of Oz.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in. Mm-hmm. Break a leg. Of course, we know that's a friendly term for folks doing theater. I hope it goes well. And I also waiting for you to come back in to talk a little bit about the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, we will do that. Thank you so much.
Wizard of Oz. Representative, another fantastic show.
It was. Thank you for having
me. This is wonderful.
Once again.
It's so nice to have this other. It's so nice for you to be here.
Thank you.
Is this a regular thing? Is this going to be regular?
It's becoming a regular thing.
I like that.
We're in negotiations
right now. Very nice.
Her people are talking to my people. My people talking to her people. But we kind of. I kind of like the.
I didn't know we had people, but yes.
but in his mind,
he has people.
We like to sound important.
That was the idea.
You
got it. But no, we've kind of feel there's like a synergy there. Mm-hmm.
It's a good conversation. Very nice.
It's great. And he has the best guests.
He does.
He really does. So I learn something every time I'm here. Tonight was my colleagues as well as you, which is exciting because I love Misery and I can't wait to see the rabbit hole and the Wizard of Oz. I'm all over. So I'm going to make some calls of some actors that I know that love community theater and have them go to that meeting on the 5th. So again, that meeting is on March 5th at the Beale House again?
Yes.
Okay. At what time is that? 3?
3:30.
Yep.
So if you're somebody who wants to get in the show, they need a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. We do.
Yes.
So please stop on by the Beale House. That's all the time we have. Myself and my co-host, Kathy Lenatra, State Rep Kathy Lenatra. God willing, you'll be able to hear from us next week at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have a great night.
Good night, everyone.